Chapter 33 Meeting the Colonists. The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. To understand the people of the past, what is needed is a time detective. Ivor Noel Hume, 1927 to 2017, was just such a man. He was one of the first archaeologists to blend history and archaeology into what is now known as historical archaeology. Apart from being a superb excavator, he was untiring in his search for small historical clues to throw light on his finds. And he was an entertaining writer who made archaeology and history accessible to all. Born in England, Noel Hume first worked at London's Guildhall Museum, now the Museum of London. From 1949, he learned his archaeology the hard way, working on bomb-damaged London's building sites. Radiocarbon techniques were useless for dating the different levels in a crowded historical city rebuilt time and time again. So instead, Noel Hume taught himself to identify 17th and 18th century pottery and glass wine bottles. So expert did he become that, in 1957, historians at the Living History Museum of Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia invited him to study their glass and pottery. For 30 years, he was director of Williamsburg's archaeology program. The incomplete historical records tell us relatively little about the pioneer settlers in Virginia who arrived by ship from 1607. Their settlements were often temporary, and their houses were built of wood and thatch, which rapidly vanished once they were abandoned. Jamestown on Chesapeake Bay was the first settlement. It served as Virginia's capital until 1698, when a nearby plantation, soon named Williamsburg, became the center of government for 81 years. The state government moved to Richmond in 1780, and Williamsburg became isolated and fell into decay. The 18th-century town had practically vanished by 1926, when the restoration of what is now called Colonial Williamsburg began. The work continues today, but now the architects rely heavily on archaeology as well as historical records for their work. They realize that valuable, invisible data lies below the ground. Colonial Williamsburg was the perfect place for Noel Hume. Previous work had focused entirely on architecture, but he had a different perspective. The lives of the ordinary people who had lived there, out of the historical spotlight. Outspoken and something of a perfectionist, Noel Hume's approach to historical archaeology combined the skills of a detective and master storyteller with an encyclopedic knowledge of china and glass. The result was archaeological magic. One of his first excavations was Wetherburn's Tavern, where he refined his already state-of-the-art methods. The architects knew the layout of the building, but only archaeology could reveal what life had been like inside the tavern. Some 200,000 artifacts were uncovered, including 47 buried wine bottles filled with cherries. Coins and other finds emerged from a 12-meter well. Life in the pub came alive. Noel Hume also excavated a cabinet shop and several houses with equal success. One of his largest digs was the Eastern State Hospital, which housed the mentally ill and had burned down in 1885. He excavated the foundations before it was rebuilt in 1985. It is now a museum. Wolstenholme Town, part of the Martin's Hundred Plantation along the James River, presented a different problem. A hundred is a subdivision of an American county. Founded in 1619, this was a tiny colonial village just over 11 kilometers from Williamsburg. The settlers had built a fort with a low watchtower and wooden palisade, or fence, to protect themselves against Indians and Spanish pirates. On March 22, 1622, local Powhatan Indians attacked and set fire to the village. The survivors fled as their houses burned. No one returned to the settlement, and it was soon forgotten. When the investigations began, only the basic facts were known from historical documents. There were just a few references to the unimportant settlement in court books and in the records of the Virginia Company of London. Only archaeology could reconstruct the buildings and lives of the inhabitants. Wolstenholme was like a shipwreck on the seabed, a snapshot of a moment in the past. After his excavations at Colonial Williamsburg, Noel Hume was a master at chasing down historical clues from tiny objects. He excelled himself at Wolstenholme. Noel Hume and his wife Audrey spent 5 years digging Wolstenholme. They started in 1976 and revealed a jigsaw puzzle of graves, post holes, and rubbish pits. The site was shallow, and so it was relatively easy to uncover almost all the settlement. Post holes in the subsoil traced the outline of the fort with its two gates. A square marked the base of a watchtower. A gun platform protected the southwestern corner. Inside, the settlers had dug a well. There was a store and a dwelling. To the south stood a Virginia Company compound with a pond, sheds, and a wooden longhouse, lying behind another wooden fence. In one spot, Noel Hume excavated an earth-filled pit. It looked like a cellar, but there were no signs of a dwelling above it. At first he was baffled. Then he learnt of a description of early settler houses in New England that had been written in New Amsterdam, now New York. They were pit houses, the roofs resting on the ground. Once the owners could afford it, they moved above ground and built a more conventional house. He had found such a dwelling. Who had lived in the pit house? The excavators had unearthed a short length of twisted woven gold near the foundations, a form of decoration worn by gentlemen and military officers. In 1621, a law was passed that forbade anyone in Virginia to wear gold on their clothing except members of the governing council and heads of hundreds. The head of Martin's Hundred was Martin Harwood, one of those who had passed the law. Could this have come from his clothing? Another find on the site, a cannonball, bolstered the idea. Again, the archives provided a clue. Harwood was the only person at Martin's Hundred allowed to own a cannon. Noel Hume also found burials, among them casualties of the attack. A pathologist who had investigated a gruesome murder in England identified the marks on one of the Martin's Hundred skulls as identical to those on the modern victim, a man killed by his wife with a garden shovel. Archaeologist William Kelso, born 1941, learned his excavation from Noel Hume. He became well known for his work on the slave quarters at Thomas Jefferson's plantation at Monticello. In 1994, Preservation Virginia asked him to excavate at Jamestown Island, the earliest European settlement in Virginia. Kelso was to find the original James Fort, used from about 1607 to 1624. Three Virginia Company ships landed the first English settlers in Chesapeake Bay in April 1607. The colonists built a fort on a marshy peninsula about 80 kilometers upstream. Every historian believed that the original settlers had died out from fever, hostile Indians, and starvation. They had come in search of gold and had failed in their quest. The original fort was a triangular structure, which everyone assumed had been swallowed up by the river. Kelso proved them wrong. By 2003, his excavators had uncovered the perimeter of the fort. Only one corner had been lost to the river. Since then, Kelso has excavated several dwellings within the fort, recovered thousands of artifacts, and the skeletons of some of the residents. The Indians attacked the fort in 1608. Two casualties, one an adult and the other a 15-year-old boy, lay in shallow graves just outside the palisade. Kelso filled in many details of what had been a disastrous start for the settlement. Historians had always assumed that the settlers were poorly equipped, but the archaeologists have shown that this was not so. They have found fishhooks and weapons, woodwork tools, and traces of glassmaking. Apparently, German craftsmen were brought to Jamestown to make glassware for sale back in London. A cellar from one building had been filled with junk in 1610 on the orders of the newly appointed governor. It contained a surprising amount of Native American arrowheads and pottery. This may be an indication of peaceful contact between the local Powhatan Indians and the settlers, peaceful contact that did not last. By 1608, Jamestown was in trouble. The settlers were starving, even after three growing seasons. But was the hunger their fault? Kelso and his colleagues believe that it was not. They learned of a 1998 tree ring study based on local cypress trees, which shows that tree growth slowed dramatically between 1606 and 1612, just when the settlers arrived. The previously unsuspected drought was the worst for 800 years. It dried up water supplies and destroyed the crops on which both Indians and colonists relied. Food shortages may have triggered war between the two sides. Certainly, relations improved when the drought eased. William Kelso's Jamestown findings have rewritten Jamestown's history. What were once seen as lazy settlers were, in fact, hard-working folk confronted by a savage drought, which almost killed the settlement. There may have been some idle gentlemen at Jamestown, but they must have been in the minority. Not that life was easy for anyone, of course. 72 poor settlers lie in humble, unadorned graves west of the fort. In 2010, Kelso struck archaeological gold when he found a series of large post holes marking the site of the colony's first church. There were four graves at the east end of the rectangular building, the most sacred part of the church near the altar. The bones were in poor condition, making it hard to establish what the four people had died of, though it was most likely fever or starvation. One grave held a fine, silver-decorated silk sash, another a military staff and a small silver box, too fragile to open. The investigators used an X-ray machine to reveal a tiny lead capsule and some bone fragments inside the box. It was a religious reliquary, a container for holy relics, used by Catholics, but not by Protestants. Few Catholics had lived at Jamestown, which was very much a Protestant settlement. Douglas Owsley, a biological anthropologist at the Smithsonian Institution, examined the bones. He found that they had a high lead content, probably a consequence of the fact that people at the time ate and drank from lead-glazed or pewter vessels. In those days, pewter was an alloy of tin and lead, which is toxic to humans. The bones were also high in nitrogen, suggesting that the deceased had a better diet than most settlers. Burial records and archaeology identified them. One grave was that of the Reverend Robert Hunt, the first pastor to the colony. Sir Ferdinando Wainman was a horseman, with exceptionally strong thigh bones. He had supervised cannons and horses. Captain William West was a gentleman who had died aged 24, fighting Indians. He was the owner of the silvered silk sash. Finally, Captain Gabriel Archer was a Roman Catholic, which accounted for the reliquary in his grave. Archaeological and biological research is allowing us to get to know the first English settlers in North America. Kelso and Noel Hume's detective work has led the Virginia settlers out of the shadows by combining historical records from both America and Europe with the data acquired in the trench and the laboratory. The breadth and knowledge needed for such research is much wider than is usually required for a dig. For instance, some of the buildings inside the fort used architectural styles found in eastern England. Why? Because one of the first Jamestown settlers was William Laxton, a carpenter from Lincolnshire. It is as if we are looking over the shoulders of the colonists as archaeology, history, and science tell their story. A magnificent site museum now takes visitors through the archaeology and the finds and weaves them into a fascinating narrative. At both Jamestown and Wolstenholme Town, Virginia's colonial past has come vividly to life. Here, archaeologists study people as individual players in their history in unique ways. The timescale is short by archaeological standards, which allows us to use historical sources to fill in the picture. The challenges of studying individuals from much earlier times are very different, especially if they are humbler folk. Only rarely does a combination of archaeology and modern medical science allow us to study the life of someone who lived over 3,000 years ago. But that is what happened when a Bronze Age man was discovered high in the Alps.